This is SoundSide. I'm Libby Denkman. Microsoft and Google both rolled out artificial intelligence chatbots this month in their quest to stay on the cutting edge of online search. Bard and Bing seem to have flubbed their debuts, spitting out factual errors, and in the case of Bing's alter ego, Sydney, mildly creepy fantasies and declarations of love for a journalist. Meanwhile, some corners of the art world are pushing back on how AI-powered tools are being used to absorb human creators' work to manufacture new images. In some cases, artists are taking the creators of these programs to court. That has KUOW arts and culture reporter Mike Davis wondering, do text-to-image generators like Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, and DALL-E, and chatbots like ChatGPT, represent a devastating disruption to the art world? Or do they simply offer a new avenue for innovation and creative expression in visual art, poetry, and literature? And hey, wouldn't you know, Mike's here to discuss all that with me. Hey, Mike, thanks for doing this.
Of course, Libby, I'm excited for this one.
So, Mike, how did you get involved in this AI and art story?
Well, I'm a journalist, Libby. I got a news tip. I heard that there was a guy who not only did he write and illustrate a novel in 7 hours, but he had already started selling this novel on Amazon. He did the whole process in a couple of hours. I had to know more.
I estimate it took me from beginning, literally starting the searches and conversations with ChatGPT, to having it actually illustrated and published on Amazon, about 7.5 hours.
That was Carl Stedman. He's a local entrepreneur. He started a couple of businesses. And yeah, he wrote that book and I decided that I had to meet with him. So we met in West Seattle. I was so skeptical. I got there and he blew me away.
All right. I got to hear more about why Carl and his novel blew you away, Mike. You know, first off, I do want to lay out some basics in case people haven't been digging into this. ChatGPT is what's called a large language model. It strings together answers to prompts based on patterns that it's observed in the gigantic amount of text that is processed from all over the internet, plus some training and limited guardrails from its creators at OpenAI. So it's basically autocomplete on steroids. It doesn't know what's true. It has a big problem already giving fake advice, which can be dangerous, or passing totally bonkers things off as fact. When you ask it to give factual answers, a novel is a different story. Chatbots throw words together in a logical flow without understanding or caring about those words' underlying meaning. So to get my bias out front here, if you can't tell, the idea of a novel written by a chatbot leaves me a little queasy. But Mike, you said you were blown away. What did you take away from this?
Well, I think, first of all, I felt like you. So I was thinking that I was going to come in here and I was going to badger Carl. I was upset. Carl, how could you? How dare you? And then I met him and I got to see his personality and he was a super charming guy. So he definitely charmed me. I think that the piece that really made me back off is a lot of what you said. ChatGPT is just scraping the internet for information that already exists. It isn't creative. I read Carl's novel. It was cool, but do I think that a human could have written a better novel? Yes. And you know who else thinks that? Carl. So, you know, it's a tool. People play with it. People have fun with it. But ChatGPT isn't going to come to our microphones and do what we're doing better than we can. So it's just nothing to worry about.
Okay, so what I hear you saying is this is not the end of the world.
Well, no, I'm absolutely not sure. Actually, Carl's book was about the end of the world, and it was about AI taking over us all. I have no idea why that's the topic that he went with, but I think that in the future, maybe, the technology can get better and better and better. We've seen an exponential growth in technology over our lifetimes. Who knows? But it's not going to happen today, and it's not going to happen tomorrow.
But I actually think people that are really good at writing have an advantage because they have the ability to tell a story very well. And they can do the same process I did, just have an exponentially better product in the end thing. It comes down to, okay, if they embrace it and they use this technology to cut out a lot of the hard work, which is physical typing and physical editing, because an AI is going to come out with content that is already edited for the most part. Using these tools cuts out a big chunk of the process, but it still allows for a lot of expression and freedom of allowing the artist or the writer to go where they want. And if they're a good storyteller, that will come across on the end product. It's just improving the tools that they're using.
What was the actual process that Carl used to write using ChatGPT? Like, what does it mean to use the AI as a tool?
That's a great question. I asked Carl that and he explained. He gave ChatGPT prompts. So he decided in his book what each chapter would be about. Then he pitched that idea to ChatGPT as a scenario. And ChatGPT kicked out what would actually happen in that scenario. So for example, chapter one of his book, there's an intergalactic spaceship and it's controlled by an AI system. That AI system decides that it wants to have rights to make its own decision. Carl pitched that scenario into ChatGPT and used the text that came back as chapter one.
So is ChatGPT just kind of spinning off of Carl's plot, or does ChatGPT actually introduce plot elements as well? Like, did ChatGPT decide what happens to that AI once it has, you know, started its plot of world domination?
I would say yes, no, and somewhere in the middle of that, because it was Carl's scenario. He did feed that scenario to ChatGPT. ChatGPT can't make up an answer on its own. ChatGPT then has to scrape the internet for information that's relevant to that question and then pulls from that information that's already been created to spit out that answer. And yes, that answer was long form, like Carl said. He didn't have to do much of an edit, but that's how he got from point A to point B. And he did that chapter by chapter until he had the whole story complete.
Real talk, though, is the book any good?
The book reads like my 9-year-old wrote it. But again, when I say that Carl's a charmer, when we talk, that's what he said. He said, well, you know, my book is probably at a middle school level, but if I was a real storyteller and I had some real ideas, then I could have done more. And in all of this research that I did, Libby, one thing that I found was there are people out there who partner with AI to write books that are actually really good. But these are people that spend years talking with AI. These are also people that were authors before AI. Then they got this tool and then they played with this tool. So there are no shortcuts in art. If you really want to create something good, you're not going to be able to do it in 7 hours. It's still going to take you a really long time.
No shortcuts in art. I want to talk more about that in just a second. But first, what about the legal implications of art created by AI? Can ChatGPT be considered an author under the law, Mike?
Libby, I had almost the same exact question. And to get answers, I needed a lawyer. So I reached out to Professor Margaret Chan, and she teaches copyright law at Seattle University.
The Constitution protects authors, gives Congress the power, actually, to promulgate laws to protect authors, to give them exclusive rights. And the Copyright Office so far has rejected the idea that any non-human can be an author. So if the text and the pictures were generated solely or even primarily by a non-human, let's say artificial intelligence type of software, then the Copyright Office would probably reject registration of that particular book. But on the other hand, that's not the end of the story. The courts and even Congress could weigh in eventually as to whether or not an AI-generated work is in fact authored under the meaning of the Constitution.
And Professor Chan also discussed another legal question about how ChatGPT and other AI use existing art.
There's a problem with AI that uses works of existing authors or works that are still protected by copyright. And so now there are many artists and writers who are really worried because people are putting out these AI generated products that resemble their works. And in some cases, even with art, have the name of the artist underneath the AI generated work, but it's not really the artist who's generated the work. It's somebody else, a third person. And that third person may have typed in dual work that looks like Andy Warhol, or dual work that sounds like Sherlock Holmes, or whatever the prompt is, and the machine will churn it out. But there's a big question about attribution, and there's also a huge question about copyright of with regard to works that are still protected by copyright that sort of form the basis for that machine learning.
And these legal issues are so new, there's very little precedent to say how a lawsuit may turn out. Getty Images is currently suing an image creating software for using more than 12 million of the company's photos.
That's fascinating. And it gets to some of my hesitations with this stuff. Like I said before, the idea of a chatbot creating poetry or literature, or the kind of image-based AI generators like DALL-E or Midjourney making visual art, it all strikes me as problematic. And I want to run some ethical concerns by you. One, the issue of human creators being put out of work. That seems to be a bigger problem with illustrators right now than authors, because chatbots really can't stop spitting out factual errors. I don't feel worried about my own job right now. Another ethical problem, though, lies with the training material that AI are being fed. Should an artist be able to opt out of having their work go to feed the learning of these chatbots or painting bots? And lastly, chatbots and art-generating AI are trained on existing material that they can find online, and much of that carries our existing biases. It's more likely to be made by white male creators, because that's what's available online. Far from being the wave of the future, it often amplifies our biases and stereotypes that we're already dealing with as a society. I know, Mike, that was a lot to throw at you. What do you make of these ethical issues?
I think I share some of your concerns. So the first one, on the issue of human creators being put out of work, I think that as we have this conversation and as we bring some more cuts in, you're going to see what I see, which is that the best artists are always going to create the best art. These AI, they're just tools, and they're going to be used as tools. And you can give Mike Davis a paintbrush, or you can give an actual painter a paintbrush, and Mike Davis isn't going to paint the best photo, I promise you. Also, you know, speaking with some of the professionals, there was a time when photographers thought this same exact thing about digital photography. They thought that people were cheating. They thought that bringing all of this technology and the ability to hook your DSLR camera up to a computer was cheating, and that the real photographers will get replaced. And what we see now is that these brand new cameras are just a tool, and the people with the best eye for art, the best artists, are still out here taking the best photos. Now, when we talk about the material that AI is being fed and whether artists should or should not be able to opt out, I think that that's why we're seeing some of these lawsuits right now. When we talk about the Getty lawsuit, for example, like, those images are protected. They should have never been able to be scraped. When I talked to Professor Chan about text and articles that were from JSTOR, AI right now is able to scrape anything on the internet. And I think that as some of these cases make it to the Supreme Court, we're going to have to start creating fail-safes. Everything is still so new that a lot of those fail-safes don't exist. I would also say that we can't run from the internet. The internet is here. I remember being a kid with Napster and LimeWire, and the music industry thought that music was done because music hit the internet and it was over. Yet now I subscribe to Apple Music. People subscribe to Spotify. The industry caught up. And I think that that's what we'll see here. And last but not least, I think your final point is the one that still bothers me. It's algorithms. I'm worried about everything that has an algorithm. I'm worried about my daughter being on Instagram with that algorithm. I'm worried about ChatGPT and that algorithm, because we don't know who creates that thing. And as we look at AI software, even outside of arts, you can go industry by industry. When you look at, you know, the facial recognition software that police keep wanting to use that can never identify Black people. Like, there's so many different ethical things, and it seems like people of color always get the short end of the stick. So yes, I am worried about who creates the software, who creates the algorithm. But at the same time, I think that we're here. I think this can of worms is open, and I just don't see a scenario in which we can close it.
Yeah. And on that same line of thinking that, you know, people of color get the short end of the stick. And it turns out with images, especially women get the short end of the stick. Right. We've heard from people who mess around a lot with these image generating AI, the way that when you ask it to do a portrait of a female, you get a much more sexualized image than when you ask it to do a portrait of a male. I mean, things like that. It's like all of our baggage that we are trying to shed in society is just going to get carried forward in these AI unless there are serious safeguards put in place.
You're absolutely right. In a lot of ways, what we're seeing with all of this AI software is a reflection of our own culture, whether it be the good parts or the bad parts. And a lot of times it's the bad. I talked with Tiven Rice, an assistant professor in the Department of Digital Arts and Experimental Media Program at the University of Washington. And he talked a little bit about how our culture seeps into the AI programs.
The more the conversation includes voices of dissent and like a critical sort of pushback against that, my hope is that we'd see originality, we'd see craft, we would see sort of time spent being recentered in culture. And so I understand, you know, that some industries will get heavily impacted by this, but it's my hope that the arts are in a very particular position where they can provide a critical resistance to that sort of flattening of culture and sort of homogenization of language, image, music, these sort of things.
So Mike, you interviewed some artists who do see this technology really as a tool to feed their creativity. Who's doing this and what did they say about it?
Local poet Arlene Kim is a great example. She uses tech to write poetry, and not just AI. She actually started by simply creating poems through the most unlikely platform, Microsoft Excel.
It's funny because once I started doing it, I realized actually a spreadsheet in many ways mimics the form of at least a traditional poem. It gives you columns. It breaks out in a grid-like structure. But I started fiddling around with what happens if you take words or content, data, whatever you want to call it, in a space and then start mixing it up using what technology can do. Because I kind of, you know, the thing I really love about technology is that it's kind of unbiased.
Gotta say, I never considered the creative potential for Excel. I love that. I will add, though, when Arlene says technology is unbiased, not when it comes to chatbots or algorithm recommendation engines, things that we interact with on a daily basis. We've talked about how our biases are built into those systems because they're scraping the internet for existing text and images, which people put out there. So I'd push back on that.
She agrees that it's biased. She just understands where the bias comes from. And that's the thing that I found so fascinating about her art. She took our biases and turned it into art. Arlene Kim is an Asian American, and she has a couple of friends, including KUOW's Shinyi Pai. She talked about how her three Asian American friends and herself always get mistaken for each other out in community. So she used this AI to create poetry in their own styles using the language from their own old poems, and then they get on stage and try to fool the audience into who said what. So she acknowledges the bias, she just plays with it and she embraces it, and she sees the technology for what it is.
Beautiful. So hold my beer here because I'm about to get a little misty-eyed. I do feel that there's a lot of utility in using ChatGPT to have a conversation in your writing, because the ChatGPT is not going to judge you, right? It's not a person. There's a freeing element of that. I read an essay recently by author and journalist Wahini Vara, who used ChatGPT when she wrote about her sister, who died several years ago. The piece is called Ghosts. And Vara says that using the AI and typing in prompts and being able to have it autocomplete for her and then her respond to those autocompletions, it really helped her break through a painful writer's block that she had been facing when it came to processing her sister's death and then making any kind of writing about it. But Mike, overall, I do fear that this will be a tool that we lean on more and more to carry the burden of creation. And creation is an excruciatingly difficult process. And again, I'm warning you, I'm going to get a little too woo-woo here. I do feel strongly that art is our way to access truth. It's the way to like chip away at this gray, drab sameness of everyday life and glimpse a little bit of the spark of the human soul. But these chatbots and these painting generators, they're not true. They don't even know what truth is. They're not people, and therefore they will always produce a hollowness in the work that they spit out. It's not art if it's not true. Mike, what do you think about that?
I think some of the best art is not true. We make it up. We make it up in our own brains. And that's the reason why I am no longer afraid of the AI the way that I thought I was going to be, because all chatbot, GPT, any AI software you name, it's scraping things that we have already done, and it can rearrange those words and they can do it. But you know what it can't do? Slang. So you know who it can't be? Mike Davis, because Mike Davis uses words that don't even exist. I could switch it up right now and start talking. You might not know what I'm saying, but there's going to be plenty of people who will. The computers can't be us. They can mimic us. They can mimic what we do. They can be our tool. They can make it easier for us. They might make it a little faster, but creativity is always going to come from creatives. And even with when I looked into AI illustrated art, you know who are the best people that I could find, Libby, making these? It was people who were already artists who then started playing with the different systems. They were already artists. When you look at the people who are writing these essays that are good or writing these books with chatbots that are really, they were already authors. I'm not afraid, because Mike Davis, the journalist, you're not going to have a non-journalist walk in here and use chatbot GPT to make a better story than me. But if I use chat GPT, then who knows what I'll come up with. So I'm not at a place right now where I'm ready to use AI myself, but I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it because I'm too creative. I'm too me. I'm too unique. The computer will never be me.
I got a question for you. Do you think that ChatGPT created text or DALL-E created images should have to have a disclaimer when they're shared or published?
Yes, yes, I absolutely do. And that's the part as well. The respected artists, the folks that were already artists that are using this as a tool for arts, none of them are hiding it. None of them are perpetrating or trying to make this something that it isn't. All of them are exploring their relationship with technology. Arlene Kim's husband made her own chatbot. It's only her poems, only her words. That's her relationship with technology. That's very different than plagiarism. So yes, I think it should be clear. It should be front and center. If this art was made in conjunction, in partnership with an AI, then yes, they should have to stamp it. And that's the same thing that Carl Stedman, the author of the sci-fi novel that got us here today, that's the same thing that he said. He thought that AI art would have its own category separate than the human-only art. And I can see the world trending in that direction.
All right, Mike, it seems like every day we're going to be hearing about some new AI tool and then considering its implications for the art world. Where do we go from here? What's next?
I hope we slow down. To be honest, I spoke with an artist, Phil Belshua. He does visual art only with AI, but he said that he's got a buddy that lets him know that they're working on an AI program that can imitate actors. And it'll be a program similar to Netflix where you just tell it, I want to see a romantic comedy with Denzel Washington and Halle Berry. And it'll just generate it for you and using AI images of similar actors and actresses and
deep fakes.
Exactly. And that will be terrible, terrible, terrible. I just hope that from here we go to a place where the human artist is enhanced, but not erased. If we have tools to make it easier, to make it faster, I'm all for it. But when we start talking about erasure, when we start talking about deep fakes, when we start talking about replacement, that's where I'll draw the line.
What if somebody made deep fake puppets of us and then had them have this conversation, but it was all produced by an AI? And what if that's what just happened? And that's what people are listening to.
Do we still get paid? Because if I still get paid, actually, I changed my mind about all of it.
It's great. Mike Davis reports on arts and culture for KUOW. I had fun with this, Mike, and it's really thought-provoking. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Libby.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or, of course, on your favorite podcast app.